Our next presenter is Catherine Burnett. Catherine is an assistant professor at Tulane University School of Social Work, and she's going to talk with us about relationships among the consequences of intimate partner violence and mental health disparities experienced by American Indian populations. Catherine.
Thank you. It's good to be here. See, I'm going to grab this water I poured, and I forgot I left it there. All right. Okay. So we're going to talk about American Indian populations and kind of the relationship between intimate partner violence and mental health disparities that are both disproportionately high among these populations. And so I'm going to focus on the work that qualitative work that I've done in with a Southeastern tribe. There are no financial relationships or relationships to disclose in terms of conflict of interest. Okay. So just to give you a background in terms of, intimate partner violence among indigenous or American Indian populations, indigenous meaning the people kind of thought to be original inhabitants of the land. People, you know, say American Indian or Native American, it kind of just depends on the preference, but anyway. So to provide some context, in terms of my framework, indigenous people have been affected by colonization and are thought to be the original inhabitants of the land. And I'm situating kind of the perspective on violence and mental health disparities within the context of kind of historical oppression. And so, you know, there are disproportionate rates of violence, disparities, other kind of, you know, mortality rates and all of these things. And this is all situated in this broader context of historical oppression. So by historical oppression, I mean, you know, the intergenerational experiences of kind of subjugation or marginalization that have been kind of imposed upon these populations throughout colonization, but they continue to be perpetuated through poverty, through discrimination, and through these kind of current traumas. So some people talk about historical traumas like land loss, forced relocation. Those things happen, but they continue to be, these populations tend to continue to experience a greater percentage of oppression and violence by things that are still happening today. And so through a historical oppression framework, the broader perspective is that through this oppression, these have constrained kind of families, American Indian and indigenous families over time, which have in some ways given rise to higher rates of violence, both from within the community and from, you know, non-indigenous people. So I just wanted to give you a little background on kind of my broader thinking about this. That said, you know, the rate of violence against indigenous women continues to be disproportionately high. You know, past research has said that it's 2 to 3 times the rate of non-indigenous women. But most recently, 46% of indigenous American women experience intimate partner violence, which can include physical, sexual, and psychological violence. Also, stalking, physical violence, and experiencing psychological aggression. These are all the highest among American Indian or indigenous women. The second highest was like multi-ethnic women, according to this most recent national survey. And also this most recent survey reported physical violence at 1.7 times that of non-Hispanic whites. So these rates vary a lot depending on the tribe you look at and that kind of thing, but they tend to be high across tribes. So that is one thing that is pretty constant across multiple years. And so typically, you know, consequences of violence, intimate partner violence, are, you know, people tend to look at mental health consequences or physical consequences on individuals. And so I'm using an ecosystemic framework to highlight the interconnections and interactions of these consequences among not only individuals, but families, communities, and societies. And so it doesn't just look at the mental health consequences for women, but it looks at the consequences on their families and, you know, something that people have called systemic trauma. So, you know, the ripple effects of trauma to the loved ones around people. So it's kind of taking a more holistic perspective on the consequences of intimate partner violence. I thought this was particularly important to look at because in this research that I have done, when I talked to women who had experienced violence, the people that they went to for support were their families. And so while many people did seek formal services, the families seemed to be one of the most important kind of risk or protective factors. And so if their families were supportive, women tended to kind of get out of these relationships sooner and just have more ability to kind of get out of this dangerous pathway. Whereas if the families were unsupportive, maybe they aligned themselves with the perpetrator, or maybe they just were had been unsupportive their whole lives, women tended to find themselves in increasingly dangerous kind of trajectories, and they would get into more dangerous relationships. And so the family really had a huge influence, I felt, on that. And so that, in addition to family, this tight-knit families tend to be really important in American Indian communities. And when, you know, one of the commonalities I found is that these effects of intimate partner violence really extended beyond the individual. Also, you know, within this context, many people live in intergenerational households. And so even if something, you know, a person directly experienced violence, they tended to live with grandparents, you know, other like aunts and uncles. And so really people felt these effects even if they didn't directly experience them because of these intergenerational households. Despite these high rates, there's really not a lot of research on violence against Indigenous women, period. There really isn't. But especially on the impact of intimate partner violence on and women, children, and families. So there's just a lack of research in general, but also in particular these consequences, there just is a lack of research. Because of this, you know, family focus, the interconnections of the consequences are really important because people, because of this kind of tight-knit nature and that really these intergenerational households make the impact much greater, it seems like. So what I found on the consequences of violence, like on Indigenous women in particular, there were five. And so really most of them looked at the consequences of violence on women's mental health was the main thing. But they did find that violence began at a young age, and it tended to kind of be associated with depression, substance abuse, and attempted suicide. They tended to feel more stressed and depressed after experiencing intimate partner violence. Again, after rape, they tended to report lifetime impacts and you know that kind of following them across their life in terms of negative consequences. And you know, associated with a high degree of trauma, depression, and dysphoria. Now, in one study, at the end, they talked about rape victimization was significantly associated with psychiatric disorders, but intimate partner violence as a whole was not. So that was kind of a mixed finding there. So why do these consequences matter in terms of mental health disparities and inequity? Is that these same consequences of intimate partner violence are the same health disparities that are reported for Indigenous populations. And so they are very parallel. The same disparities that they have are the same consequences of violence. Although you can see there are context-specific variations, so there is a need for localized because there's a lot of different kind of historical contexts and norms within each community. So it's really important to look at these kind of in the local context. So because there really isn't a lot of research on the consequences of intimate partner violence for Indigenous women, I just wanted to give you some background on what they tend to be among the general population. You know, there's a host of kind of mental health consequences in terms of anxiety, depression, PTSD. So there's a lot of research really supporting these consistent consequences. Also, children from these households are 5 to 7 times more likely to suffer psychological problems like depression, anxiety, aggression, attachment problems. And so you can see that there's a pretty direct effect on also children's well-being when they're in households with intimate partner violence. They're also, I was just looking at some of the research on this, they're also like, there's a 40% chance of experiencing child maltreatment for these children versus like a 6% chance in the general population. Also, male perpetrators of violence commit child maltreatment 50% of the time. So not every perpetrator of violence also abuses their children, but about half do. So they have an increased likelihood. So it's not one form of trauma that many of these children are witnessing or experiencing. It's kind of this co-occurring forms of trauma. And you can see many of the consequences for children also kind of place them at risk for becoming, in the research that I found so far, in related research, it also seems to place them at risk to become involved in unhealthy relationships because of the reduced self-esteem, because maybe they're experiencing child neglect and they are seeking that those resources in a relationship, you know, and this also kind of seems to give rise to, like, teen pregnancy and a host of other kind of unhealthy relationships across their life. And so it's just it's problematic, and it kind of starts a negative cycle that continues across the life. In terms of the effects of violence on the families as a whole, there wasn't any research found, but there's research that recommends this research. Sturge Apple talked about families being directly affected by intimate partner violence because of the psychological consequences, but also indirectly because it can affect parenting practices. So in the research so far, high parenting stress and experiencing intimate partner violence increase the likelihood of children experiencing maltreatment for women. But for men, they didn't find that effect, and they didn't really look at how much time, you know, child care the males were providing. So there's a lot left to be understood there. But it does potentially interact with parenting behaviors. So in the research that I did with a Southeastern tribe here, I've been working with them for about 5 years. And really developed long-lasting relationships. I went through the tribal council to get approval and the local university IRB approval. But I really spent a lot of time getting to know the community leaders, heads of agencies, and really chose what are thought to be kind of culturally congruent methods, like storytelling, providing gift cards so that to pay people for their time. And many of them live in kind of poverty, so it kind of made a difference that way. And really just spent a lot of time immersed in this culture so I could try to have accurate interpretations, not being from the culture myself. I also used multiple cultural readers who read my results before anything was published, so it didn't inadvertently harm the community. I also, in the things that I publish, I don't tend to reveal the community name just to protect their anonymity in case that it would come back and harm them. There's been a kind of a historical context of harm with research, and so I just want to take added precautions about that. So the method that I chose or that I used was a critical ethnography. And so it's an examination of the culture and context around intimate partner violence. And there's 5 stages to this particular method. It includes kind of participant observation in the first stage, and then the reconstructive analysis is the data analysis method that's used for all forms of data. Each stage has its own standards of rigor that are upheld. And so the results for this presentation focus on these interviews with 29 Indigenous women who experienced violence. And although 30 professionals were also interviewed, all of these stages have been completed, I'm just focusing on the data from these 29 women. If you have more questions about the method, I'm happy to answer those later. So what I found in terms of results of what are the consequences on women, so I didn't report this on here, but 83% of the women actually experienced some form of child maltreatment in terms of witnessing sexual abuse or direct maltreatment. So almost all of the women actually experienced a child maltreatment. I just was looking at another study on a community sample of who experienced child maltreatment, and it was like 3/4. So this was just a community sample. So it seems like child maltreatment is also really high among the general population, but definitely high within women who experience violence. And this is, only 29 women, so that it's definitely not a representative population. But most of these women who later experienced violence witnessed it as a child. And they tended to be exposed in their close connections to friends and families through these households. Women reported psychological consequences like post-traumatic stress, depression, and suicide. one woman talked about how her mom had experienced it and how she holds on to it and it destroys her. She's been admitted to the mental hospital like 3 or 4 times. She's been through electric shock therapy. You know, and research has found that violence against Indigenous women tends to be more severe than non-Indigenous women. So much of the research or much of the violence people described was quite severe. One woman talked about the post-traumatic stress effects. It was horrible to go through that abuse, to be fearful all the time. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen when I leave home? Another woman said, psychologically, he was in my head all the time. Every time I heard a noise, I thought he was coming to get me. Another important finding was women talked about how it affected their later relationships. And so women talked about distrusting others and also having a hard time making decisions. So if their partner kind of controlled every choice they made in terms of what kind of toilet paper they're going to choose and everything, they tended to just kind of be agreeable and go along with anything when they ended up being in a healthy relationship. So they just had trouble with decision making because they were used to having those decisions made for them. Also, they tended to shoulder kind of more responsibility. So if something happened in the relationship, it was my fault. And so it seemed like it affected how they expected their parent or their partner to treat them, even when they weren't violent. So it seemed to have a connecting effect in future relationships. So over 60% of women talked about the consequences of violence on children who witnessed violence. So bipolar, depression, insomnia, adult ADHD were some of these consequences. One woman who actually was also a professional said, we have witnessed children who witnessed neglect, witnessed abuse, who witnessed intimate partner violence in their homes. And she said, it'll always continue unless we can change something. Just like the boys, you hear them make the remarks, I'm never going to do what daddy does to mom, but they do because they've been conditioned that it's acceptable. I mean, even though they may not accept it in their mind, it's a way of life. So a lot of these people may not have been exposed to healthy families or healthy relationships or families without violence. And so if that's all kind of you witness, it's likely that it may continue in the future, even though you don't want that to happen. One woman talked about her daughter who was affected by the violence she witnessed, not only by witnessing the violence, but her father was also absent. And so it's not only the direct offense of the violence, but like if there's a violent parent, they may not also be providing the needs that they need to as a parent, as a father. And so she said, I think she's the one that wanted the father the most, and it hurts her the most, the way he treated her, the way he wasn't there for her. She would beg him to take her fishing, and he was too busy for that. So there's kind of multiple components to that unmet needs. So some of the effects included like self-harm, cutting, and then I kind of indicated a lot of these children tended to get into unhealthy relationships. And this one in particular said, picking a father or a partner like her abusive father, looking for the love and that acceptance that she didn't receive. Excuse me. Okay. And finally, on consequences of violence on families, actually over half talked about the consequences on families. One woman talked about her father becoming abusive after her witnessing that growing up. So she saw her family members become abusive. Also just this kind of normalization of the violence. One woman said, with my family, especially my grandmother and my aunt there, to them it was very acceptable for it to happen. They would never be angry at him for doing anything that he did. His sister beat her husband. My grandmother was beat by her grandfather. So to them, it was very acceptable. And since then, so it's just kind of been the norm where people weren't speaking up. Since then, I continued to do research with this tribe. And one woman said people become desensitized to it because they see it so often. So it may not be that they tolerate it or they want it, but they're kind of desensitized to it. Multiple people that I spoke to were affected by this person being killed as a result of intimate partner violence. And so this transcended kind of family relations into friends who really felt like families. This woman said, my best friend was murdered from intimate partner violence. He beat her with everything he could find, and people didn't try to stop it. So this was kind of a traumatic affects really at the community level. I heard multiple people talk about this one influence. So because it is so tight-knit, you know, the word kind of spread like wildfire there, you know, that there's a really, it's a strength in that the communication is really fast. But on the other hand, when people hear about trauma and violence, it also, I think, affects the whole community. Okay. So it really does seem like the effects of violence really begin at a young age, and they transcend, you know, youth into across the life course. Their quality of relationships with others. And that really everyone was affected by this in this context. And so more of a holistic approach that can address the kind of systemic trauma of intimate partner violence may be a better approach in this context. Also, this normalization was really common in terms of the intergenerational nature of violence. And most interventions for intimate partner violence are individual and separating the partners, which make a lot of sense, but they don't necessarily address the needs or the healing that needs to take place on the individual children, families as a whole. And so really intervention research and prevention may need to focus more on the family as a whole and maybe doing it separately, but also really looking at that because if you don't kind of take care of it, I think as the children become adults, they're more likely to continue this cycle of violence.